Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 5th of Cheshvan, and today a special treat we get to hear from Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky, even though, to the best of my knowledge, Rabbi Yechezkel Abramsky did not have tshuvot written in a sefer that we have in the Bar Ilan Project, so I don't really have access to it. He has a tshuva, or discussion, that the Tzitz Eliezer recorded of his, so we'll get to hear his thoughts on the permissibility of gelatin. This is from the opening to Chelek Dalet, the fourth volume of Tzitz Eliezer. I think that Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Yechezkel Abramsky, was a senior Talmud Chacham, a senior Torah scholar to Tzitz Eliezer, and I think Tzitz Eliezer was, I don't know, proud or happy or that he had had the opportunity to have this correspondence with Rav Yechezkel Abramsky, who was a dayan, a judge in London at the time, and then had moved to Yerushalayim, had been a dayan in London and moved to Eretz Yisrael, and this is from the 5th of Cheshvan of Shnat Tashuvu Yerushalayim. So that's part of the rabbinic tradition of naming years by psukim or phrases of important issues. So this is from Tashuvu, is Tafshin, and then two vavs in a bet would be Tafshin Yudalid, which is 1953. Cheshvan of 1953. So they have a discussion about gelatin. So 1953. The Tzitz Eliezer is 37 years old, around 37 years old. I just checked on Wikipedia, Rav Yechezkel Abramsky was born in 1886, and he moved to Yerushalayim in 1951. So this is soon after he got to Yerushalayim, and he's having a discussion with Tzitz Eliezer about issues of gelatin. He's already the man who's already, you know, in the process of retiring, as it were. So he wants to talk about gelatin. He says that he's pleased with, he praises Rabbi Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, for writing Sfarim about how to provide, how to find halacha, to find from halachic discussions, from Talmudic discussions, and the discussions of Rishonim Acharonim, how to find the actual halacha as a member of the Beis Din in Yerushalayim. So he says a lot of things come up at all the time in all the areas of halacha, and we have to figure out how to deal with them. So he's very happy for him that he's doing this. So when it comes to gelatin, he says now, so the problem with gelatin is that gelatin, at least back then, I don't know how it's made now, and as always, these are not, when I discuss these tshuvot, I'm not saying that we can paskin halacha based on these tshuvot. I am just learning these tshuvot to learn from these great rabbis. What to do in practice is always something that we would have to check with the actual consensus of psak in our particular time or with our particular personal posik. So when it comes to gelatin, the way gelatin was made was that you ground up the bones of animals, usually non-kosher animals, and you dried out those bones and you ground them up, and then that, from there, you got the substance from within the bones that was the gelatin that was used in the I think it's an emulsifying agent, but use it in the process of making various kinds of things. The question is whether gelatin is permissible or not, because it comes out of non-kosher animals. So it's clear it comes out of non-kosher animals. The question is whether you can use it anyway. So some people say it's like a whole new thing. It's a yitzirah chadasha. So Yechezkel Abramsky says it's clearly not that, because it's the same stuff that came out. There's nothing that happens to it that makes it not that. No, that's not the end of the tshuva. We have a while to go. So it's not that he's finished there. But his point is, some people have claimed that if I take something and I grind it up, the original thing is as if it's gone, and therefore this shouldn't be thought of as something coming out of an animal that's a non-kosher animal. Because Gormansky is not impressed with that halachic, with that perspective, because it's the same stuff. There's no reason to think it's not the same stuff. It's where it came out of it, and all of the chemical things that we do to it. So he says that's all ways of getting at and pulling out something from within the bones that was in there. But it's not like we've changed it. It's not like we've completely turned it over. Now, there are going to be people who argue with this. I think Ezra actually will comment on this in a second. But his claim is that as long as it's the original thing, it's the original thing. So I'm not sure that's true. So for example, this is me talking, and I'm trying to have the right to argue, but I just point out that in other areas of halacha, we sometimes say the original thing has gone away, it's not there anymore, and this is a new thing, even though the same logic would apply. In any case, he says that it's all to get out, it's just ways of getting at the gelatin held within the bones, but it's really the bones that we're getting out of, and therefore that's not a reason to allow gelatin. And he gives an example, as Rabbi Yonah, about honey, which has absorbed something that's prohibited. So if that thing is completely dissolved within the honey, you might have thought you could ignore it because it's not there anymore. And I think this Rabbi Yonah says that then no, you're not allowed to. No, the other way around. Rabbi Yonah says you're allowed to ignore it in that situation, because it's not the same thing at all, because there it's not there anymore, it doesn't exist, and therefore you're allowed to ignore it. But here it's the same material. You've had the gelatin, and you've had the same material, and therefore it's the same, and you can't do anything about it. So, Tzitz Eliezer puts in parentheses here. He says, Nitkabadti b'divrei tshuvato, I am honored that I received this response from, and he calls him Rav Hai Gaon. So Rav Hai Gaon is one of the last of the Gaonim, you know, the end of an era, and he was a very important Gaon. He had very important Shuvot, very important discussions of various issues. So when he refers to Rav Hai Gaon, I think he's saying something like that. He's saying, you know, somebody from the old country who's a well-established Talmid Chacham, a leader in Torah and a leader of the world. So he says, I'm honored by all that, but L'chibas HaKodesh, which is a phrase that comes up in the Tzitzel very, very often. Out of love for that which is sanctified, I'm going to discuss whether or not I think I have to accept his ideas here and whether that they are the last word on the issue. Because he says, if you make the gelatin from soft bones, which have taste in them, and then they get dried out completely, and then they're ground into a flour, right, like sugar or flour. So he thinks that there's room to say it's not the original thing anymore, because when Rabbi Yonah was quoted in the Rush, it talks about honey, that something prohibited fell into the honey, and Rabbi Yonah says that the prohibited stuff, even though it melts into it, so he says you can maybe be matir it because it's not there anymore. And then there's something else, there's something called a musk, which I think they got off of musk oxen, and he says that started out as, it's sort of a hornish kind of a thing, and it starts out as blood, and then it turns into something else over time, and then we're allowed to use it and treat it as musk. So they're saying, we do have things where as processes continue, that we think that something new has come here, and that new thing, even though it's clear that it started out as something else, is now something different, and therefore we can treat it as different. So even though it's clear and accepted that this has started out as bones that had taste to them and that were a problem, now it's all dried up and it's been ground into flour, and it's different, and that might be, it's ground up into a flour, not into flour actually, but into a flour-like substance, and it's different enough that he thinks there's room to argue that Rechezkel Bromsky is not the only way to see this issue. He had another example, the Rambam in Klei Hilchos Klei Mikdash thought more, one of the spices, one of the incenses, one of the things used in the process of making incense was dam tzarur b'chayesh b'hodu, a certain animal in the Far East, in Hodu, in India, that had some kind of a blood sort of all clotted up together, and then it may turn into this thing that we use as more. And the Chesed Mishnah says that since it changed from being its original form of blood, and it was turned into basically a kind of a dirt, a kind of a fine ground up thing, and that's the way it is now, he thinks that might be why you're allowed to use it. The Ur Sameach disagreed. The Ur Sameach said that the fact that it's now hardened up and you can't really eat it, and even dogs can't eat it, he says that only makes it permissible to be smelled, right? But to eat it, he thinks if it was not Kodesh, if it wasn't being used in the Beis HaMikdash, if we're using it outside else, he doesn't think that from there we can get any sense that you're allowed to eat it. So he thinks that Or Sameach thinks that that's true because if we ate it, we would be achshevei b'achilato. So achshevei b'achilato is the halachic principle that sometimes there are things that we can say, oh, this doesn't count for anything, it's not important, it doesn't have any value anymore, it's changed so much that it's not considered an item that we have to worry about. But if you eat it, so it says it's the Or Sameach, then you're showing that you do care about it. And therefore, if you care about it and you've made it important, therefore that it should be a problem to eat it. That's what the Or Sameach said about more. And that would imply, I think that the Or Sameach would have held about gelatin more similar to Rav Yechezkel Abramsky, even though he might have said, yes, it's been changed by virtue of completely drying out and being ground up, but once we use it in food, it means that it's akshaveh. And he says that might be the Or Sameach's understanding for why the Rambam says if you have food that has gone bad, and it's so bad that people won't eat it anymore, and then somebody eats it anyway, so Rambam says you're patur. You're not liable for a full violation of the prohibition of eating that food, but it's still not allowed to be eaten because when the person eats it, that's achshaveh. That makes it, at least for him or her, important enough to count as food, and maybe that's what's going on there as well. But with gelatin, it's not clear that that reasoning has to apply. Anyway, I mean, you would say, so that's the problem. The gelatin would be like, ach sheveh. Although, you know, before we go on with the Ezra, I could just point out that you could say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have to listen to me. We can listen to the quotes of Shut Achi Ezer, of Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, who says that, Mikevan, da osem yizeh avak dak letzore chamada. The point of the gelatin is you make this fine dust of it, and the point of it is that it helps hamada. I think it helps emulsify, it helps it hold its shape, it helps it bind together. So that's not Ein Bazeh, he says, Achshaveh. There is no Achshaveh there because you're not eating it because you want to eat it as a food. You're using it. I mean, it would be like I took string and tied things together. You're not saying that, and then I eat the string because it doesn't matter to me. So that's not Achshaveh of the string. It's not that I've made the string important to me. It's that I needed it for these other purposes. So the Chaim Ozer had said, that's why gelatin should be okay. Gemochein says to the Ezer in his long parenthetic comment that's coming to an end, if you look at the Mishnah Melech Hilchos Brachos Asuros, he thinks that if you have bones that have no meat on them whatsoever, so the meat itself is obviously asur, if you have bones that have no meat on them, and the skin that's covering them, the hide is covering them, is very dried out, it's all very dried out, and there's no moisture of any kind of meat, whatever, he thinks that the Mishnah Melech thought there might be room to be matir that as well. And so, since the Ezra closes, just says, this idea that the Chizkel Abramsky has, that it's clear that you can't say that gelatin is no longer a problem because it's been changed so significantly from when it was the bones of the animal. So the Ezra thinks there's room to discuss that further, and that there are those who held. There's room to say and to point to those who held that no, that in fact, if it changes so much and you're not using it as actual food, if you're using it as actual food, you'd have an achshaveh problem, that you are making it important by eating it. But if you're not using it as actual food, there's room to say that it's okay. Doesn't matter for our purposes because the Rav Chizkel Abramsky then goes on to say, but halachically, I think that in fact gelatin is probably mutter because, this is his reason now, he doesn't think the prohibition of eating non-kosher animals, of eating a nevela. So a nevela would be like a cow that hasn't been shechted properly. Meaning there are non-kosher animals like a pig. So when a pig dies, it's not a nevela, it's a pig. But a nevela is if you have an animal that could have been kosher and then it's shechted in a non-kosher way, a way that doesn't make it a kosher animal, but that doesn't make it permit it to be eaten. So that's a nevela. And you're not allowed to eat any parts of a nevela. So that Rav Chizkel Abramsky says, but I don't think bones count in that in terms of the prohibition, because just as, halachically, nevela animals create tuma. They create, for those who touch them, they create ritual impurity. But it doesn't apply to the bones. And he offers three proofs to this idea. First proof is in Torah's Kohanim, which is the Midrash Halacha on Vayikra, on the pasuk that says, Mibisaran lo tochelu. So the Torah's Kohanim, it said, Velomina atzamot, not from the bones, and not from the gidim, and not from the tlafim, not from the hooves, and the nails, and all these parts of it. So it shows that, into the prohibition, the bones are not included. And the reason that we get it is because it says, Mibisaram, from their meat you can't eat. Right? Velomina atzamot. The Torah is telling you that the bones are not included in this at all. And then you might have argued, no, the bones are not allowed. It's just that you're not going to get malkut. They're not fully part of the prohibition to get malkut, to get punished in court for it. So he says, no, because the pasuk used the words lo tochelu, and that means eating, and bones aren't eaten anyway. So therefore, it's got to be that it's telling us that the atzamot are not considered part of the nevela. So if they're not considered part of the nevela in terms of prohibition, so then the gelatin doesn't have anything, because you could say, well, it's yotzim in the nevela, it comes out of a nevela, but it doesn't matter, because it's the bone. So that's his first step. He thinks the bone, so the fact that we grind, the dry out the bones and grind them and turn them into almost completely something else, that doesn't impress him. But what more he's comfortable with is saying something we wouldn't have realized, I wouldn't have thought to say, that bones are not included in the prohibition of nevela. That's proof number one. Proof number two is the Magid Mishnah in Hilchot Ma'achalot Asurot, on the laws of things that are prohibited to eat, points to this Torah's calling to Gemara and Kulin also, but Ivlata Lo Tochelu, that says not the hide, not the bones, and not the sinews. He uses that to explain why the Rambam says that if somebody eats those parts of it, it's not allowed. But you're putter because they're not re'uyim la'achila. So according to the Magid Mishnah, it seems like they're not part of the nevela at all in terms of the prohibition. So, and the reason is, he says, in other words, the Magid Mishnah says, when the Rambam says, that re'uyim la'achila, he's telling you why it is the Torah excluded them from the prohibition to begin with. But and so how come the Rambam says that they're asur? So he says, yeah, it's not because the bones themselves are asur. It's asur, they're prohibited, because there are soft bones. There are bones that have some taste to them because they're soft enough that you can suck out the marrow or whatever it is. And those bones are prohibited, not because they're bones, because they've got the taste of the nevela in them. So that's why the Rambam says it. So there's a Gemara in Psachim, a Daf Kaf Bet, which says, sorry, this is going to be the third proof now. The Gemara in Psachim in the third proof says that when nevela was allowed, it's a discussion there about what's permitted by Hana'ah, what you can get benefit from in certain situations. And nevela, you can send to a non-Jew and give it to him as a gift. So it talks about what you're allowed to get benefit from in that situation. In that Gemara, there's a discussion of whether Gidin, there's a discussion in several places in the Gemara, about whether Gidin, whether the sinews of an animal have taste to them or don't have taste to them, in terms of various halakhic issues that come up. And the Gemara wonders about that for their own purposes. But Rashi there says, if Gidin don't have tam, if they don't have taste to them, Rashi says, Alma lav tam basarit pehu. Excuse me. They don't have any taste of the meat, and therefore they're not called a nevela. V'lav nevela mikre. They're not called a nevela. Ela ke'atzamot hein. Tehein eitz be'alma. They're like bones, which are like wood. So the Chazon Rambam says, you see, Rashi's saying explicitly that bones aren't considered part of the animal. They're not meat. They're not part of food, and therefore they're not considered nevela. And since the gelatin comes from bones that are dried for like 2 years in the sun in India, I don't think we make gelatin that way anymore, but they're dried in the sun for 2 years, and he says, and then he puts in parentheses, look in Yeridea when it comes to, there are other places where we dry things out. So if they're so dry, then there's no reason, there's no way to think that they would give tam, that they would give taste, and therefore he's saying, and therefore they become bones that are completely not part, considered part of the animal in terms of these isurim. And he gives three proofs for this idea as well, that the fact that the bones don't have any taste. It's a discussion about whether now, how can we be sure the bones don't have any taste? So he gives a couple of rayot, a couple of proofs that the bones don't have any taste. One is, in Chulin, when they have a discussion, how do we get, we have this common idea, and Ashkenazim use it even more than Sephardim do, that if you have prohibitions, you need 60 times the prohibition to be mevatel. Meaning, let's say something prohibited fell into a bunch of stuff that we would have wanted to use, and we can't find it anymore to take it out, and so we're trying to say, so do we have to throw away everything? So the answer is, if it's more than 1 in 60, we have a problem, but if it's less than 1 in 60, we're allowed to say it becomes batel. So that 1 in 60 number is a discussion in the Gemara. It actually came from a puzzle that talks about cooking hazroa b'sheila. So talking about the bone with the rest of the animal and what you count or don't count in terms of counting 60. So there in that discussion, there was one opinion that said 1 in 60 and one opinion that said 1 in 100. So the opinion that said 1 in 60 says you count the meat and the bones together with the meat and the bones. And the one who said 1 in 100 thinks you only count the meat with the meat. So the truth is we count 1 in 60, which would seem to imply that we count the meat and the bones together. So Rashi writes there, the one who said 1 in 100, who said only the meat, thought you don't have to count the bones because the bones don't give taste. And then the Ran there said they're really arguing about a couple of things, but that the one who says 60 thinks that the atzamot hazroa, that since they're soft, are the ones that are prohibited because they give tam. But the atzamot ha'ayil, which are hard, might be mitzaref anyway. Whereas the person who said 100, whatever it is. But the point being that there's a whole discussion there about whether or not bones give taste, and that might be part of the question. So there might be some bones that give taste, but the bones that are hard and don't give taste are not part of the discussion at all. That's proof number one. Proof number two, you have Yerushalmi in Trumos, which talks about the seeds of Truma, that if you collect them and want them, then they're Truma, because they're part of the Truma, obviously, because you need them and you want them. And if not, then they're allowed, because they're not really Truma anymore. You can use them for other purposes. That's what it says about the seeds there of various things. But then it goes on to say, the bones of sanctified animals, bizman shu mechatzam, when you gather them together, when you want them, so then you're going to use them. And so too, there's a whole discussion there about that. It depends on whether we're talking about the bones that are soft or hard, etc. So after all that discussion, right, in which he said, basically, he thinks that gelatin does count as coming from the animal in the sense that its gelatin is still bones, and the fact that it's gone through all these processes can't lead you to say it's not bones anymore. That's a question of its own, and it's not clear that that's true, but that's what he holds. But then he says, but even though for that reason I would think it's usser, I end up thinking that it's permissible because I understand the Gemara to mean that bones actually don't count, and bones aren't really part of the prohibition of nevela, of non-kosher meat coming off of animals that have not been shechted properly. I don't think bones count for those purposes with all the proofs that we've seen together. And then he closes with, "Amnam kein lahalacha lo nira isur," but he thinks, I'm sorry, even though halachically there's no prohibition, and this is a very important paragraph to think about. So let's remember that because Glabrowski is writing this in 1953, he's a 67-year-old man at the time, he's in some sense already retired, and I mention all that because he's about to make a point that some people would call a public policy point. So there are people today in our times who I've certainly heard say, once it's a policy issue, so then anybody can say whatever they want. They can all have their own policy perspectives. I think that's untrue, and I think that he's going to point out reasons that it's untrue. Then the question is, who is qualified to weigh in on policy issues and whatever those policy issues are and how they work? So that's going to be a question, and where we do take what stands and what kinds of things. Because what he says is, practically, he thinks we have to think about this, and it may be that we have to say that it's not allowed. That maybe if we say it's allowed, it will cause further problems. What's the problems? Because there are people who make the mistake themselves and lead others to make the mistake. Be'omram she'dinei ha'Torah mekablim shinui kifi chifetz ha'rabbanim u'morei ho'ra'a b'Yisrael, who claim that you can change halacha however you want, according to what the rabbis really want, according to what the teachers of Torah, the morei ho'ra'a, is really the people who paskin, the decisors of halacha among the Jewish people, they can do whatever they want. You know, when I was growing up, there was a famous person who used to say, with his rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. So I thought that was a new idea that this person had said. So this person didn't say it until at least the 70s. But because of Abramsky, already in the 50s, knows of people who are saying things like this. And he's saying, and gelatin is going to be a problematic thing, because if we permit it, people would say, oh, see? They wanted gelatin, so they found a way to permit it. If they really wanted to, they'd permit all these other things as well. Why does he think gelatin is that case? He says the gelatin, because originally people didn't understand what it was. It's always an important thing in halacha that before you paskin certain things, you have to really know and understand them. One of the impressive things to me, a long time ago, I read a tshuva of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about, it's a long, long tshuva about electricity issues. And he goes, before he writes any halakhic issues, he gives an introduction to electricity. He talks about the people he consulted with and the books that he read. And he did literally research, you know, to understand electricity and how it works so he could understand the halakhic ramifications. So, unfortunately, sometimes that doesn't happen. And therefore, in the gelatin case, it didn't happen. So people didn't know about gelatin so well. He doesn't mean just post, he means regular people too. And then because they didn't know how it was made, it was accepted by everybody that it's usser. They said they didn't know or understand how it's made, but they didn't know what it was, and therefore they just decided it comes out of a non-kosher animal. It must be usser, because they know that it started out as the bones of a nevela or a trefa of animals that didn't have a proper shechita. And there were people who said, not only that the gelatin is actually the soft meat inside of the, you know, the marrow, inside of the bones. And therefore it's usser. So if we come now and say, you know, it turns out that we've come to understand that bones of a nevela aren't part of the iser, and it's only the dry bones, and there's no time in this, and that's why it's permissible, Rabbi Chaim Glabrowski is saying, we have to worry that these people say, you see, they wanted gelatin to be mutter. So not on the gelatin issue. I think this is extremely important to think about. And there's no easy answer to this question, because it's not a purely halachic question in the sense of there's a clear halach here. It's clear that we don't want people to get the wrong impressions, right? That should be clear. It's clear that we should worry about people thinking that rabbis just do whatever they want, which is absolutely untrue, right? So all of that is clear. Now, it's also clear, as it happens, I think it is clear, that to some extent, post-skims tendencies and sympathies get involved in what they decide about various things. That's also true. So it's a complicated, complicated question, and there are people who will say it in the wrong way, and you have to worry about that. So does that mean you never matter anything that people have assumed is us? So that clearly isn't true as well. So Rabsky goes on to say, it's not like I'm making things up to worry that if we are matter, if we say it's allowed, that it will support the view that unfortunately he says is nefotza, that is widespread, that rabbis do whatever they want. Some people say it bizadon. They know that it's not true. They just say it because they want to tear down the halakhic system. And some people say it not knowingly, and they unfortunately think that it's true, and they just don't understand it, that the rabbis can do whatever they want. So, and he says, Al-Kagon Zeh, there's a Gemara in Yoma, and Daf Mem, which says, Al-Titnu, Makom latzidukim liyodot sheyemru lefir etzonam emyosim edakol. So back in the times of the tzidukim, the Sadducees said it too. They said, oh, these rabbis, but the Sadducees, it's unclear exactly what the Sadducees disagreed with. Some people say it was about Torah Shebaal Peh, some people say it was about other things, it's unclear. But they clearly disagreed with how Chazal understood halacha and found halacha and formulated halacha, and they said, these rabbis, they do whatever they want. So that's a big worry. And Rabbeinu Chananel in Shabbos said, "Mehashaminan shafilu dvarim hamutarim," things that are permissible, right, that regular people will be involved with, and they don't understand how it works, and they don't know that it's not anybody who can find a head there. So therefore, Michael Gabrowski concludes that we should probably aser gelatin. We should probably say gelatin is aser. Now, we nowadays, I think, aser gelatin for other reasons. I don't think we're doing it for these reasons that Michael Gabrowski says, but it raises, so gelatin is clearly an important issue, and that you can consult, you can talk to the OU, you can talk to the Star K, you can ask them what the story is with gelatin and how we do or don't allow gelatin in our times. That's not my issue, because we're here studying tshuvot of particular poskim, and if somebody has a personal posek, then it's perfectly fine to follow that posek regardless of what other people say. But other than that, you'd get a consensus of posek. So I'm not doing that research to know if this is the consensus of posek. I think it's probably not, but because what Bromsky is saying, one way that people think that gelatin is permissible is actually, he thinks is untrue, even though others held it was, that the fact that gelatin is ground up into a fine dust after it's been dried out means that it's not treated as the original item anymore. Chaim Ezra Grzinski seems to think that way. Yeah, Tzitzel Ezra seems to think that would have still been a good argument. That because Gobrowski dismisses and disagrees with and does not accept. The other, what he does accept is he thinks the bones of a nevela animal don't count as part of a nevela in terms of the prohibition of eating it. He thinks that prohibition applies to eating meat and not the bones. But then he concludes that we have this problem here of people getting the wrong impression. And that question of what things that we can allow will people get the wrong impression from, that I think is an important broader halakhic issue. It comes up here and comes up in other places to think about. His position was that at least in this situation, by virtue of the fact that people didn't always understand how you make gelatin, and by virtue of the fact that people have come to believe that it's prohibited, if they hear that all of a sudden it's mutter, it will lead very much to a problematic conclusion by those people, and therefore he holds the gelatin shouldn't be permissible. So that is a great opportunity to learn from somebody whose shoot we don't have in our Bar Ilan, and we therefore generally wouldn't come to. Rabbi Chesko Abramsky, important Eastern European Rav, an important dayan in London for 17 years, and then moved to Eretz Yisrael for the rest of his life, a responsible day from the 5th of Cheshvan of Tafshin Yudal of 1953. Have a great day.